Hey, this is Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to do a brief shout out to a partnership of ours, the Freedom Festival 2024 in the heart of New England on May 4th. Participate in a unique celebration where the pursuit of freedom, health, and community values come together through engaging activities and inspiring experiences. Immerse yourself in all things Bitcoin. That's right, including Bitcoin speakers, Bitcoin music, Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast Barbecue, Bitcoin workshops, and etc. Participate in interactive demonstrations like parkour, cold plunge, wow, that sounds fun, hot tub, a soccer contest, and a raffle with prizes. Buy your tickets today. You can enter our affiliate link, HighRate20, for a 20% discount. You could also visit, for more information, massadoption.net. Anyway, on to our show.
Screw it. Here we go.
And it's like, how do you marry AI with Bitcoin? Because when you think about AI, once you have your models and stuff, like, how do you monetize that? Will you sell access to it? Well, in the fiat system, where you're selling access to it, you're literally burning energy as you compute these AI models, but you're getting paid credit.
Right.
So you almost can't start that business by running in the black unless you use Bitcoin.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. All right, dude. So you got this vaporizer?
Yeah, so it's the Mighty Plus, and when you turn it on, you get to see the temperature, and that's a little too high. We won't go 410. But essentially, instead of burning, like combusting carbon and then inhaling that into your lungs, which I've heard is bad. I have a couple firefighter buddies. They say it's bad.
Yeah.
Inhaling. Sure. Instead of combusting the material, the bud, right? Because there's bud in there. Like there's little capsules.
Okay, right.
Like yay big.
Oh, there's capsules.
Yeah, you fill that with bud right there. And then you put it in this little oven and the temperature goes to exactly what you said. So 380 is like my sweet spot where like I need to be, I don't want to get like super high, right? It's not the full effect. And depending on what temperature you use, the terpenes, the oils or whatever, right? They all boil at a different temperature. And so you can dial it down or dial it up. And like there's all these like different things. And then on top of that, you're not inhaling like burnt carbon, which again is supposed to be bad for you.
I think the last like vaporizer, like everybody's got like the little vape pens now or your vape and liquid. But the last vaporizer I had similar to that was like the Magic Flight launch box or whatever. It was, you heat it up and the vaporizer kind of tastes like popcorn.
See, I was
like 10 years ago.
See, 10 years ago I was in the Navy. Right. So I did 11 years, 4 months, okay, 3 days in the Navy as a Chinese linguist. I couldn't touch the stuff. And then
right,
fast forward 2019, I get out at the end of 2019. I'm at a buddy's bachelor party slash like leading into the wedding. And we're all drinking. And my buddy's like, hey, you guys want to go hit a joint? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm not in the Navy anymore. Like, and then I had the best sleep that I've had.
Oh,
forever.
Sure.
And like the Navy kind of messed me up. Like I got, you know, joint pain and like I have a disability rating and all this other stuff, but it's like, you know, when I wake up
as a Chinese linguist.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's a Chinese. We're gonna get
all right, hold on, worry,
but yeah,
let me hit this real quick and then we go into it.
Yeah. I want to we'll get to the injury.
We should,
but while you're hitting that, I want to start
who we're talking to.
That's right, we should.
Hi, my name
we should
Gary.
Lisa.
Gary, introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Gary. I run Shenandoah. I'm, first of all, husband, father, and I run Shenandoah Bitcoin Club. So that's basically it. No, I'm just kidding.
And you were a Chinese linguist. And you were a Chinese linguist with a bad hip.
Yeah, two bad hips and a bad back and bad shoulders. I was in the Navy, which I think one of you guys is a veteran. I can't remember which one, right?
We both are. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. We're both in the Air Force, and I, one of the things I know by looking at from Nostra, getting your resume, was that you went to DLI. So when I was in the Air Force, I flew on the RC-135 rivet joints. So I was an airborne systems engineer. I ran the like ELINT equipment, radar tracking type stuff for the Ravens. But everybody else on the plane, for the most part, was a cryptographic linguist, and they were airborne. That was their job. They had various different kind of focuses and targets, different languages that they had when they flew with us. But they all went to DLI as well, and they all learned like Chinese, Arabic, Hebrew, Russian, Farsi, all these different languages. A lot of them, and you guys learn those very quickly. You know, for the most part, they kind of immerse you and just teach you a brand new language straight out of boot camp, right? Do you want to kind of like start there and like what that was, that experience was like, and like how you ended up being getting Chinese?
Ooh, yeah. So that was the Defense Language Institute. It's at the Presidio of Monterey, California. First of all, gorgeous place to go to as an 18-year-old,
right?
And just like live there,
great, being paid, great place to live action role play.
Yes,
to do.
Yes. Listen.
That's what they were known for. The linguists were known for LARPing.
There was a gal there, and this was like before modernity. Like in modernity, like you'd hear about this and you'd be like, okay, like, yeah, that's like just a normal like college campus. But this chick walked around with a stuffed cat that she like addressed, and was like, it was like a reality for her. It was very interesting. It's very, very interesting. But
yeah, there was I just wanted to say, very similar to that, there was, you know, before we have all this identity, non-binary, transgender stuff, in the Air Force, there were linguists who they would identify. They would tell. I mean, they would just tell, like, their peers, their colleagues. They would go to, like, the chief master sergeant of their, you know, their unit, of their group. And they would say, I want to be, I identify as, like, a griffin. And I, like, that is who I am. Like, can I get this changed? Like, and they thought they were serious. The military, back when I was in, laughed at them. But yeah, they're old school when it comes to this gender bender stuff, identity bender stuff.
Like on their dog tags?
They try to get stuff like that, for sure.
Yeah.
The
linguists, and it takes a special type of...
But they're great people, too.
Yes. There's a specific test that you have to take to get into language school. It's called the D-Lab, the Defense Language Aptitude Battery. It's basically like, how quick can you read through this manual, like how the language works, and then like just kind of decipher it. And there's a certain type of person that can do well on that and then can go through DLI. Like I have a dude that was in my class that developed a nervous tic, like legitimately, like his like eye twitches now. I don't know if he resolved it or anything. Maybe he's a Bitcoiner and he'll hear this. Anyway, Milligan, if you're out there, I hope you're doing great, buddy. But he like was so stressed because they ram the language down your throat. They're like, we're going to take a 6-inch wide fire hose and shove it in your mouth with the language and turn it on. And you're not going to get all of it, but by golly, you're going to get it. And that's what it was. It was like 2 years. I think it was 60 some weeks with like some breaks in between here and there, of just straight immersion. Like it was, yeah, nonstop. Your friends are like, you're hanging out with people that are studying it.
How are you using that skill? I'm curious. In the Navy, how?
In the Navy, yeah.
Strictly translation.
Not strictly translation.
I mean, a lot of.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, yeah, I was going to say I've told the story a million times, and it's if I get in trouble for it, whatever. But what we did on my plane was they would fly. We'd be flying over Afghanistan, for example, and there would be people with different communications, push-to-talk radios, sat phones, things like that. Different frequencies, different modulations, etc. And they would be talking. They'd have repeaters set up all over the mountains, and you bounce that signal would bounce up into the atmosphere. The plane, we had an antenna for everything, a receiver for everything.
Yep.
We'd listen. We just tuned to these conversations. We'd listen to what they were talking about, and if they were talking about a ambush, like there was somebody talking on a push-to-talk radio, they're going to ambush blue forces coming around this pass. And as the plane would fly in circles, we had the technology to triangulate the position for where those signals were coming from. And we could send in a B-1 bomber just blow up the side of a mountain, and then our guys didn't get ambushed. Here's the problem. What Gary said, you don't really get the whole language. Like, you get enough. You get enough to kind of understand that somebody's saying, like, we're going to a wedding party, but sometimes the Taliban would call an ambush a wedding. So people would get, you know, they would, this is on the news. This isn't like classified information.
How many weddings you guys blow up?
The drones, the bombs, they would blow up weddings sometimes. And part of that is, yes, they were using coded language, but they also, these guys, like, learning Pashto is like, for somebody who knows English and they get like a year and a half to learn Pashtun, like that, they're not going to get it all. So like, it's very hard to pick up nuance and just like local, you know, dialects and things like that when you just kind of like know the basics.
Here, let me explain then what I did, because I think I finally formulated the thought in my mind.
Perfect.
There was all these things where you got to experience like firsthand, like what the language was like and everything. Instead, I was very, very niche, and I was very good at translating maritime communications or correspondence. And so, like, I got this, like, small, like, if you think about it, like, official, like, maritime traffic has a very set vernacular, like, a very set word.
Right. Like, all that traffic controls English, no matter where you're at.
Right, depending on where you're at, right?
Right.
But, like, those were the words that I translated the most, and I learned. So I was not very good at my language, and it led me to, after about a year, which I did go to Afghanistan in that year, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And I used to draw a little circle on the map to make sure you were allowed to fly where you asked to fly.
Yeah,
which was a fun job.
Now expand on this, because I know a little bit to the answer to this question, but you just said you were in Afghanistan. Now,
maybe
there was some Chinese activity going on that wouldn't surprise me, but there's a lot of times where these linguists will go to a country where they don't know the language. Like, they're a Russian linguist, they're flying in over Bolivia, or they're flying, you know, in off to the Korea, right? But they still do other stuff. Like, don't you? Even if you don't know the language, you're doing other sorts of.
Yeah, you know what I did is I babysat two grown men and a grown woman who were our translators, and I babysat them on the base. That's what I did in Afghanistan for the majority of my time, is I was like middle management.
I didn't know if you were doing some sort of like signals intelligence stuff.
I was later.
Okay.
Not when I was in Afghanistan.
What do you mean you babysat? You're just like sitting in a room with them most of the time?
They were working for me. Oh. Like, I was like in charge of the linguists, right?
Oh, okay. So
like I managed their schedule and interacted with them on a regular basis. But it was just a weird
managing those
when I'm like 23, right? And like, I go to Afghanistan and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to Afghanistan. Like, I get gun, they give me body armor. And then I go and I'm just like, I get to babysit adults, which I did have a bunch of awesome experiences out there. Don't get me wrong. Like, I got to shoot cool
guns. For sure.
It was, and I went to a Toby Keith concert. RIP.
RIP.
Yeah.
I had one of these experiences too, but it was like one of these like these rappers with like a 1 second, buddy.
See, that's what I'm talking about. This is how you know it's a real podcast. We're getting stoned and there's just kids running around. It's like,
No,
what was your experience, Mike?
I had experiences where they would bring people to the bases. One in particular was this rapper, and they were, it was like, I can't remember the name of the rapper, but he had this like, you know, diamond Rubik's cube that he would move while he was rapping. I thought that was pretty funny. But the other one that really stands out was, the WWF came, or the WWE came, and they did an entire show.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. So my experience, I didn't really get quite that. But mine was similar in the sense that if you follow me on Twitter, right, like, you know, I like to troll and like post videos or like memes that, you know, seem like a real commercial or it's like announcing some event, but it's like that bullshit. When I was there, it was like some lull. Like, we weren't getting any Toby Keith, we weren't getting any like Ted Nugent, we weren't getting any like American Patriot like coming to give us a free show. We got none of it. I was pissed. That was probably part of like what my recruiter told me I'd get. But so I started to make fake. I would go online. Like, we'd have days in between where we would fly, where we would have nothing to do. The linguist would be like mission planning, but my job was just to make sure like these systems work. I had nothing to do during mission planning days. So I'd sit around, on Microsoft Paint or like some a Photoshop software, and I would make flyers that were announcing, like, you know, April 20th, Dane Cook is coming to do a free show at the the pavilion, whatever. And it'd have like, I'd make it look like all the kind of AFES like announcements that they would have, and made it look super legit. And I printed out dozens of them, and I'd go to the chow hall. I'd put it in like the announcements things in the chow hall. I'd put up the laundry. I would put it all over the base. And then like, I did this multiple times. I did it for like Van Halen, but I did it different trips. So it was like a totally different group of people at LUD Airbase when I was there. I could get them every time. It was like a whole new captured audience. Yeah. And it got to, yeah, and there was multiple times where it was like, it made like, you know, the newspaper for the base. It was a giant base. Like, somebody's pulled a prank again. Everybody like showed up. They thought Dane Cook was playing. Nobody called bullshit on it. By the third time, they started to like catch on to me and they wouldn't let me do it.
Dude, that's
wait, you were out at LUD?
Yeah. Like, oh, four times. Yeah.
I passed through there.
It's not a bad place to go, of all places, you know? It's no Fallujah.
No, I never went to Iraq.
Me either, luckily.
So you get out of the military 2019.
Yeah. I want to go back to the language real quick, though. I want to go back to the language real quick.
All right, go for it. Go.
This is kind of just one of those, like, out there questions, but, like, when you learn another language, I feel like you read a bunch of history books, you read a bunch of academic texts about Chinese history, like, whatever country's history. But if you learn their language, I feel like you probably have this, you learn just as much about their culture and their, and some of their history,
yes,
as if you were to read about it from somebody else's perspective in English. And I'm wondering, like, yeah, what that experience is like, because in the context of your training, you know, maybe this is crude, but maybe you were never like, we're going to go to war with China. It was always defensive. But it's like, you're training, you're learning this language so you can kill Chinese people.
I mean, that's like, yeah, and literally, you know, the Department of War, right? Like, was no, they changed it to like the Department of Defense.
Right.
Yeah, it's having insight into like another culture is super interesting,
because that's how they think in their own language, right? Like, it's how they formulate ideas, formulate concepts of family, like by the words they think.
Learning the language,
it's almost like us, you know.
It is like us, Mike. It's exactly like us. Because we're all
well, it's all context, right? Like, it all comes down to context, and context is everything. And that's been huge for this whole Bitcoin thing. This whole, like, I when I got out, I went into software engineering. I went to work at Microsoft, but like, context when I was learning software stuff. But yeah, I'm a self-taught dev. But while I was learning that stuff, it was like learning language. Like, it was like learning Chinese again. So I'm really good at like
learning how to take like the computers,
or just asking context questions. So like,
no, that's a good, yeah.
Understanding
more as a software engineer. Yeah. As a software engineer, especially as much as now that I think about it and then I'm stoned, it's whenever I see news about AI or, you know, the machine learning or the machines taking over Terminator style, it's like, it's so different. The way I think is like, no, I've been trained to think like the machines. I know their language. I know how they work. I know like where the ghosts are hidden.
Yeah, it's still a pain in the ass to hook all this shit together.
Yeah. And I was like, I think I'm one step ahead of the machines if they turn on us. I think it's the developers that are going to have to stop.
Well, the developer knows, because you just go unplug it. Like, eventually at some point, if you're running some system and you're like, I have no fucking clue what's wrong, you're just going to go unplug it.
That's true.
Turn it off. Kill it. That's why the cloud was so great. Like, I started working in the cloud, right? And this Kubernetes thing. And they're like, you treat your application like it's a cattle. You want as many of them as you can, and you just kill them when they're not useful to you. And damn, that's a ruthless way of thinking about software.
Dude, yeah,
that's exactly what made the cloud happen.
That's something that's interesting.
Something that comes to mind when you guys are talking is something I thought about is like, it feels like we, in a way, are like these AI robots already. Like, I don't think we're any different in a sense, just because, you know, how do we gain information? We adapt it from everything around us. We build a model around that, and then we spew out what we think is the correct answer based on the information that comes to us.
Yeah. But when you think about this though, and you think about the context of like you're I think you're right to a certain degree, but I think like our systems are so finitely complex, like not finitely, but like they get down to such a granular level, like the human body, the human mind and everything, it goes down to such a granular level that when you compare that and the thought that it takes into like, how the fuck does my stomach work? You know what I mean? Like all the systems and systems within systems within systems.
Because depending on how your stomach works, depending on the chemicals in your stomach, are you hungry or you have like some sort of issue? Like that affects your thinking. That affects your problem solving. It affects all of that, right? So it's not just your mind. It's your serotonin.
Okay, what we're doing with AI, quote unquote AI, right? It's a lot of pattern recognition. Well, that's what it started as, I think. But it's evolved into like, it's so generalized. And this is where, have you guys listened to like Jeff Booth's theory on like, or is it Jeff Booth's? Somebody's theory, I can't remember, but it's basically like the multiple, like a general AI is going to suck. You need like a coordinator AI, and then you need those like hyper specialized ones. Because again, that's sort of how like...
I think that makes sense. And I think that's how it is kind of, it's coming down to like people are making these local plugins and custom, you just need an AI for predicting my JavaScript code and helping me find... You know, exactly. Like that's a hyper specialized type of AI. And then you have these LLMs, like these ChatGPTs, and those suck. And they're kind of interesting sometimes, but when you try to interact with those generally suck. But I think a lot of people mistake how annoying or shitty and woke ChatGPT is and take it for granted.
Yeah, but you saw uncensored models. Do you guys know where to go for that? Unleashed.
I haven't
chat. Have you been there?
Unleashed.chat. No, I haven't.
Okay. Unleashed.chat. And you can pay with Lightning to run uncensored models, and it's private.
Perfect. Yeah, I was like, why don't you abstract ChatGPT? You just pay for the API, and then you like charge Lightning for people to use, so they don't have to KYC.
Have you been? You know, this is a thing. Like, this has been happening. Have you been following this at all?
No, just to the point where I find those ideas and I start thinking about them, and then it's like, oh, somebody's already done it. And then
I can show you where they're doing it.
It's, perfect.
So this guy, Cody Lowe, Marine Corps veteran, actually, I think he's an officer though. So, take that for what it's worth.
He's a sir.
He's a sir. Yeah. Cake eater. But no, he's cool. I've worked with Cody a bit on the Fediment project, but he also.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to get into that too.
He was doing this like hackathon thing. And it's like AI for all. And it's like, how do you marry AI with Bitcoin? Because when you think about AI, once you have your models and stuff, like how do you monetize that? Well, you sell access to it. Well, in the fiat system, when you're selling access to it, you're literally burning energy as you compute these these AI models, but you're getting paid credit.
Right.
So... you almost can't start that business by running in the black unless you use Bitcoin.
So, yeah,
I'm trying to walk through that one.
I didn't know this existed. So I put out a tweet, I don't know, a few weeks ago. I thought it would be...
It's happening on
Noster. I thought the super interesting thing would be there needed to be a market for compute bandwidth data per second, like with sats. Like if I want this many, you know, kilobytes per sat hour, whatever. And then you create that, just that flowing back and forth, like what's the natural relation? It would be Bitcoin, Lightning Network, and AI, because you're streaming for compute, you're streaming for bandwidth. And I felt like that's like the market that would like really just boom all of this.
Yes, I have two things. One, this is all happening already on Noster.
Awesome. This is awesome.
Two,
it's great to hear.
eCash makes this even better.
All right, I can see that. All right, because I feel like Lightning would be pretty cool, but like a Fediment, like for customers and like these networks, right?
Not Fediment, not Kashu. Kashu is like a single.
Okay. Sorry, mint. Yeah.
And then Fediment is like the federated one.
Gotcha.
Is this the part where I ask about the difference between those two things, or do we not go into that on this show?
Yeah, I mean, we could do like the high level, like if you want to explain the high level, like 30-second answer, and people can dig into it deeper.
So Fediment is a federation, just like a multi-sig. Like the people running the mint are in a multi-sig together. Just think of that. That's like the simplest way to think of it. There's a threshold to the multi-sig. And so they all have to agree on the state of the system.
Got it.
Right. And that's like, that can be anything. It's modular, which is kind of cool. Very unexplored yet. But it doesn't have to be eCash, Bitcoin, and Lightning. It can be like anything that you want, like a federated consensus on.
Okay.
But it doesn't use like a blockchain or anything, right? It's like a different form of consensus.
So what is being used right now on Nostr?
Nostr right now is doing Zaps, which is Lightning. That's like the most prevalent one. But some of the MPubs that I follow, specifically Kali BTC.
Yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah, he's working on the Kashu protocol. And there's been tons of Nostr development with that stuff. Like people locking to an NPub, this eCash. And if you don't know what eCash is, it's like the data is the money. Right. So right now, like Bitcoin, the keys are, the wallet is not really the money, right? Like it's the ledger. It's like the blockchain that's like the money. And it's like a representation of transfers. But with eCash, like the data is the money. It uses this blinded signature scheme where the mint knows the amount and that it's valid, but it doesn't know anything else about it. And so when the user gets it back, they can unblind it, which like basically removes an outer layer of anything the mint might know, but still has that signature. And so you can use it like offline, and it's a data, it's a blob of data. So like whatever you could do with a blob of data, do you want to embed it in an HTTP header and gatekeep your API on that? Yes, you can do that. And so now, like I said, the AI stuff running in the black from day one, you know what your cost of electricity is, you know what it costs to run these models. You can now charge a margin in micropayments, right? Because remember, this is Bitcoin, this is eCash, this is Lightning, specifically Lightning and eCash, definitely with Lightning right now. But now you're operating in the black, or you charge for like a runtime, right? So this is what Unleash.chat does, is they say, hey, you buy $5 and then you have like $5 worth of sats as credit, right? And then the cost is per compute. Like whatever the model is, it gives you the cost per compute.
Right.
And so Unleash.chat is running in the black already. Like they're operationally profitable from the get-go. And when you think about that from a Bitcoin, like you want to talk about stacking sats, I mean, it's almost as good as podcasting 2.0, right? But it's like with this AI stuff.
And they don't have to like balance channels because they're using this eCash system.
So that's another benefit of eCash. Yeah. The Lightning thing is like you're either getting custodial fountain where like somebody else is holding the keys for you and managing it.
Sure.
That's good. For a lot of people, like not everybody's going to be able to run a Lightning node, at least not anytime soon.
Right, but you could like, you could also just do it custodial and then just have like, you could write a simple script to just withdraw from your custodial wallet to or do an atomic swap or submarine swap, whatever you want to do, whenever it hits a threshold. So you're not leaving the risk of having like all your money on this custodial.
Right, and if you do, Primal, which is a Nostr app, it's really sleek. It actually uses Strike under the hood. So Jack Mahler's company Strike is like Primal's using that API, and it's like a seamless, like you go on, you can use Apple Pay to buy sats to zap people with, but they limit you to a certain threshold of sats. Like they won't let you have more than X sats in your account.
If they're using Strike, is that the feature of like, not that you want to use fiat, but some people might want to use fiat that you could just convert to sats on your end. Does that work too? Or is it just kind of the basic Lightning?
I don't know. I think Cash App and Strike have similar things. I'll be honest. I don't use either of them very often.
Sure.
I just know they're integrated into these tech stacks.
That's cool. Yeah, I've thought about that before. Like for compute, you could do it where you could just gatekeep your IP address and then like charge your people that come to your store, your restaurant, or live near you for your internet access to your internet or like Netflix or like just internet data.
Interesting.
Right. It's like, you know, like when you go to a hotel or something, you go to like in the you try to access that internet, you get a little pop up. It's like, hey, this is what you paid for the X amount of time if it's not covered by the hotel or the restaurant to pay instead of paying with your credit card. It's just like, all right, I just pay through this, you know, Lightning app or through whatever for my, you know, if I want one movie, I want an hour or whatever, it's a couple thousand sats, a couple hundred sats per minute.
Holy shit. I think you can do
crazy if you can already do that.
Well, no, I think if you,
oh,
so there's like, do you know what the sats link is? Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
So it's like Cold Card made this like big version. It's called a Q. Mm-hmm. And then they made like a non-hardware, like a non-wallet version. It's called the Sats Link.
It kind of looks like that vaporizer you showed us.
It does a little bit. Yeah. But they have peer-to-peer connections.
Oh, nice.
So what you're just saying
too,
right? Like sharing it.
Right. Or if you could like run, if you could get that on a mobile app so anybody could just kind of fucking log into it and get access eventually.
Even just like, do you know, have you heard
of And think this? About like, what's the, go ahead.
Meshtastic.
Oh yeah, like mesh networks?
Yeah. Do something like that.
For sure.
Have you thought about how this integrates into the future? Like how Bitcoin and AI.
It is the future, bro.
I mean, like 10, 20 years down the line, like what does that world look like?
I'll answer this first, but I think you have the two biggest, in 10 to 20 years, the two biggest consumers of energy in the world having a way to have like a balanced synchronous transfer of value back and forth. You send compute, you send information, we send sats, because there's two things you can do with like all this energy that you can consume. The most profitable is either mine Bitcoin or compress data in AI with compute, compress time with compute. Yeah, as I've been thinking about, but I can't go into that one yet. I haven't thought it out yet. But anyways, you're doing these things, and there's going to be like sometimes when the compute and the energy you put towards compute is more profitable. There's going to be times where Bitcoin mining is like the most profitable thing you could do with your energy. And those will just balance each other out. That's how they'll be able to transfer value across the world instantly for digital value.
Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin's the only money AI can use anyway, right?
Exactly.
What are they going to do? Update databases of each other? No.
I mean, if you think these ordinals JPEG dudes are annoying, like wait till you're competing with fucking AI for block space with Fox. You think you're going to be able to outcompete BlackRock and AI for block space? I don't think so. They're going to be so efficient at managing their UTXOs and broadcasting at the exact perfect block and fucking just having the most fucking efficient signature scripts, UTXOs. And
or they're going to own all the fucking hash too.
Yeah, exactly. The both.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Yeah, fuck, that's actually right.
There's a lot to unpack right there. I mean, you can think about like every single transaction you make will be on this layer, just because every single business will have to adopt not only a Bitcoin position and an AI position.
The most valuable transactions of that day in the world of information and money being transferred between AI and fucking Bitcoin, the most important financial transactions in the world will be documented on the blockchain every day. Every block. They'll all be there. Yeah. That's what will end up in the blocks. Right, exactly. So that's
just the ones that paid the most fees.
Well, that means that's the same thing.
That is the most important, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing.
And this is why I'm in the camp now. I've been convinced that like Bitcoin is going to replace the central banks, and that's what we need it to do.
Right.
we don't need it to do
because
coffee.
Because eventually the most important ledger will be the blockchain and the people that will be or the entities or the controllers of the private keys that get to transact on that blockchain will be AI. It won't be the central bank anymore. But right now, the most important ledger is the central bank. I mean, like, what's going on with the overnight, the repo, the treasury issuance? Like,
that's a shit
important ledger
take.
World right now.
That's a shit coiner take. The blockchain or bust, baby. It's the most important thing happening financially. Most people just haven't realized it yet.
I'm just saying, in terms of total value in the world, that's the most important. But the blockchain is going to take it.
I get what you're saying. I mean, actually, somebody's got to have done that calculation, though. Like the comparison of like transaction volume of Swift versus like the transaction volume of like the same year of Bitcoin or something like that.
We'll have to actually look at it.
I think we're going to get like this cycle. I think it goes like that flips. Like people realize that flips.
Oh, you think it's going to happen sooner than later?
They've been saying it every cycle, though. What do you think of that? What do you think? That's what they say.
My first cycle, guys. Listen, tell me what.
That's fine. That's all right.
It's like I got out of the Navy in 2019. Fucking COVID popped off. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I thought I was crazy. And then, like, my buddy, he's like, oh, dude, I'm staking crypto. I'm making, like, 18K. You should come stake crypto. And so I bought some Ethereum. And I'm like, oh, like, I'm a dev. Like, I'll do dev stuff with this, like smart contracts. And I send it to my MetaMask wallet, and I lose, like, $30 out of 300 I bought. I'm like, shit, I got a wife and kids. I can't do this. He's like, my buddy's like, no, you need, like, $3,500 worth of ETH, and then you can, like, do really cool stuff. I'm like, okay, I can't do this. Like, we just got a new house. Like, my kids, like, turning three.
Diapers are expensive.
No. Yeah. And so.
But yeah, dude. Okay.
It's, I mean, I got my third in the other room, 7 weeks. So we're like, again, I can't mess around with shit coins. Luckily, that's like the most I touched the stove. I'm so cheap that I went back to Bitcoin because my buddy was like, ETH Bitcoin, like those, you know, OGs. I'm like, okay, cool. Mm. I went back to Bitcoin and I'm like up and running on my node in like less than a day. I'm syncing the blockchain. I'm like, wow, this is like the poor man's money. This is great. Everything's open source, like everything's open source. So I'm like, whoa, this is cool. And I do some digging, and eventually I like come to like Start9, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm like, well, you guys should do Monero. And so I had like two kind of like shitcoin things where it's like I bought a little bit ETH, but I was like, I don't have expendable income like this. Like I can't take these kind of risks. And then I got into Bitcoin, and then I kind of like touched on like the privacy. I was like, oh yeah, because I have like a cyber background, right? So like the last 5 years I was in the Navy, I was working in the special operations community doing tactical signals intelligence collection, right? So like cybery background, like I knew about protocols and stuff like that. So it's cool learning about all this stuff and kind of going down the rabbit hole. And I was always like, why? Nobody seems to care about my Monero idea on Start9. And they're like, you can do it if you want to. It's a free country. Like very like open, like just like basically like, we're not going to stop you. It's an open source community. You can fork our repo and like make the changes you want. And then I read the Bitcoin Standard and listened to Breedlove and Saylor, and it was just down. Like, I don't even think I'm still.
Yeah, that was the gateway for a lot of us for sure.
Yeah. So, and all that to say, this is my first cycle. Like, I'm trying to stay humble.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, don't. I think it'll be great. I think it'll be fun. This is my first cycle. I got in. Well, I bought like in 2018, but I didn't really get into like early 2020. So I got at the very, very end of the bear and right before the halving and then right before everything went gangbusters. But this is my first like riding it down, going to the bear market. So now I don't know, like, have you been long enough? Are you like traumatized like by the bear? Just kind of like every time you want to get excited about how high it could go, you're like, oh, dude, shit, fuck, I got to be humble. Like, 100K is like the top. There's no way it gets higher than that this cycle. Just trying to like prevent yourself from like getting overhyped, or you're just like super hyped. Let's go. Super cycle, baby.
I don't know. Like, I'm just here for the ride. I think it's completely within the realm. Like, if I had to put a number on it, I think it's completely within the realm. It goes, shoots up to like 500K.
I'm with you. I agree.
Right. Like, that seems reasonable to me.
Kind of preparing for that. Yeah.
But I'm so far
down. But if you can go there, go far.
Well, if I'm so far down the rabbit hole that the technical rabbit hole, like the dev rabbit hole on the technical side of things, that like, dude, there's so many more cool things. Like you were just talking about like the AI stuff and like all these other things and like people doing like cryptographically verifiable like bets online, like using Nostr.
Yeah,
sir. But not like bets, but like they're called DLCs or discrete log contracts.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And all this works with Bitcoin now because of Lightning and Zaps and eCash.
Hell yeah, dude. Crazy. I'm with you. So like I'm so bullish. I can't stop thinking of like new ways that it's going to revolutionize everything. So again, I'm with you. I'm here for the ride. But I will say this. I think it's even this show is guilty of it where we're like, this show's not about the fiat price. This show's about deeper shit, you know? And it is for the most part. But when you get those pumps, like, and you just get that, like, that you're like checking the price and it's ripping, it's like, it's a very simple signal to the rest of the world, like, told you. And it's,
this show
it's,
all it's about nice. Fiat price.
Bro. Prices that can.
we're all about fiat.
I enjoy it. Anyways.
Yeah, sorry. I'm
waiting for my Lambo.
Yeah. And a girlfriend, right? Everybody, even like my wife gets a girlfriend, I think, at 100K. That's what I've been told on before I got off Twitter.
How is your wife's journey down this rabbit hole been? You said you kind of like troll her with Bitcoin stuff, but you one of those that like talk your ear off about it?
She just gave me a look. No, it's usually when we're around other people that she's like, don't talk about Bitcoin.
Okay.
No, she gets it. She's just like, she's not convinced.
Flirting with Bitcoin podcast?
She's not listening to Flirting with Bitcoin. But those two live close to me, so.
Oh, there you go.
Hopefully.
Oh, nice.
You should meet up.
I might.
I've done a pretty good job myself of around other people, just don't be that guy.
Right. They all know I'm that guy already because I went through that.
Right. Exactly. Already. If they want to know more at this point, they know who to ask. You know,
like so at my gym, I always get the Bitcoin jokes. It's like, oh, Bitcoin, Gary, and I'm like, oh. Like, okay, man.
One thing I'm running into is that it's not even that I can talk about Bitcoin all day long with my neighbors, my friends, you know, even the Uber drivers. But it's like all that cultural stuff around it that really gives my position away. Like, my kid was playing with like a toy gun in someone else's garage. And I start for no reason at all, I start talking to the parent about like owning gun ownership, like sovereignty.
Nice.
And they just look at you like you're nuts.
They're like, okay. Where's this all coming from?
See, I found a local small business group called the Small Business Freedom Alliance. And they basically got together after COVID shut them all down. And they're like, if this happens again, we're like, no thanks. We're not playing this time. So they're pretty, I'm lucky.
Never again.
The local freedom loving community,
that's cool.
That again, they know I'm the Bitcoin guy. I've been very less pushy with them cause they're all like small business owners. They don't have time for bullshit. But like, I don't know. I'm like, hey, can I buy the coffee and like my club can sponsor it or something? It's like $20 for coffee, right?
That's
not a big deal, but it's cool. Cause it is, you know, small businesses are important and all the people are just like some of the most genuine, hardworking people that I know, and they just wake up and crush it every day.
What did you start the meetup? Talk about that a little bit.
I started the meetup pretty soon, so like first touch point. This was like end of 2021 because I was leaving Microsoft to go to a startup, and it was shortly after that I got orange pilled, and I think by May of 22 I had started the meetup. I didn't get on the meetup app though until like I'd consistently done it for about a year. So I've been running the meetup for about 2 years now.
Now how big is that?
It started off with me and my friend Charlie, who Charlie runs a node, but he has no Bitcoin. I gave him a node, and he still has no Bitcoin. But he's a good buddy. Fair. I give him shit about it all the time.
But he runs it.
But he runs it, yeah. But it started with me and him in a restaurant, like a side room. Like, you know, the party rooms. And I had a projector and I had PowerPoint slides.
And so your buddy,
that's not the most military veteran shit ever.
Of course, of course. But your buddy, okay, so your buddy's part of, he's the founding member of this group. He goes presumably to most meetings. He runs a node, but he still doesn't have any. What's that? I've never met that type of Bitcoiner. I guess he's got the whole Bitcoin, the blockchain at his house, but he shows every meeting. He doesn't own it.
No, I mean, he's like the gun loving friend that I have.
Okay.
If I want to go,
so he's just like he's an ally. He's a Bitcoiner ally.
I'm not going to use that word, but yeah.
I know that's a troll a little bit, but don't get mad.
No, but he's good. Like, it's nice because, like, him and his wife just had their first kid. And we met online in a libertarian Discord.
Nice.
But yeah, he's a good dude. We go shooting pretty as often as we can. We used to play the shit out of some Escape from Tarkov, but I had to quit that addiction to work on Freedom Tech.
What do you do now? Do you like work for a specific company, or are you just kind of, you live in the civilian world still?
Yeah, I'm still fiat mining. I work at a cybersecurity defense contractor, and that's about as much as I'll say about that.
Sure.
I just, given my background, it was a place that I was able to land the big tech layoffs that happened at the end of 22. I was part of that. Fundrise was the company I was at, and they laid a bunch of people off. So I was looking for a job, and my current company was hiring, and it's not a bad job.
Do you want to like make the jump over to working on something in the space? Is that like something you want to do? I mean, it sounds like you've got the background, the skills for it, and the passion, obviously.
Yeah, I've been trying.
I know those cyber defense jobs do let you stack pretty good amount of sats, so.
Right. Yeah. And like,
so it's kind of hard to walk away from.
Yeah, and like Microsoft lets you stack pretty well. I don't know. I've lowered my time preference.
Good answer.
And I started an LLC to try to, it's called Virginia Freedom Tech. And my goal is to either do consultations, do services, like I got a couple servers I can set up and run. Or do like Bitcoin stuff, like resell. I would be selling Freedom Tech hardware. So like mesh testing devices. I'm trying to work on like some of the wallets, see if they have like reseller deals, like through, you know, like through an official LLC. Because I'm going to Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville in July. And so I'm hoping to like at least get the relationship started, and then I can like meet people and like,
yeah,
you know, it's more,
that's
like
a good, it's gonna,
you know, if you're gonna let me resell your stuff, I should at least like shake your hand or something.
For sure. That's a great place to go. Network. If you're listening, go to the conferences and start meeting the people you might want to work with, have relationships with. That's how I got my jobs.
Yeah. But also the Freedom Tech.
Jerry, dude,
go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you have any insight on the sort of the importance of cybersecurity?
Whew.
To answer that question however you want. Mike is very vague.
No. It's, I mean, what is important? I think what's more important that is actually actionable, because cybersecurity is a whole, there's a reason there's a whole industry around it, right? Like you have to know shit. Makes it very hard for, humans are always fallible. But I think privacy is easier to obtain, but or be like more private in a cybersecurity context than most people realize. Even just like a simple VPN that like is $5 a month, mm-hmm, or something, like that's a huge enhancement, exactly, to your privacy. And it's layers, it's trade-offs. It's the same thing. Like Bitcoin has all these trade-offs. Like you're running a light.
Right. The worst thing about VPNs is trying to use Google and constantly having to do the captcha.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's alternatives now, right?
Sure.
Or at least there's
That's the thing. That's building there's a lot of things that people make these trade-offs for a lot of different reasons, but some people think that they just don't care, and that's why they make the trade-off. And I disagree with that. I mean, some people don't, but
easy.
I think that it's not easy. It's the, there is more, some people are on social media as their public persona many times because that's where they go to put themselves out there. That's how they're making money. That's how they're succeeding. They're giving up all that privacy on purpose because it's valuable for them. Google's easy for them. So we have to make something that is equally as valuable, easy to use, and provides them as much value as they're getting from these, what we see as unnecessary trade-offs.
And that's where I think Noster comes in. Because you're more in control of those trade-offs with Noster.
Right. And you're aware of them. You can make that conscious decision for each one. It's not made for you by the device or the account that you are.
Or you can ignore it all, but the option exists for you to take control.
Sure. Sure. There you go. Right. And that's good. So I was going to say, what particular aspect of this, where you're at in the rabbit hole, do you find the most fascinating and interesting right now? It sounds like two things, Freedom Tech and what's developing on Noster. But if you wanted to, I don't know if you had any more specific things that you are really thinking about, really interested in right now.
I call it layer zero, and it's the people. Like, it's like this. Like, this is, like, fascinating to me. And it's, like, the longer I've been in a rabbit hole, the more nodes, like, physical, like, people of layer zero that I've synced with, right? Because, like, layer one's all syncing. But the more people I, like, it's interesting to think about the various, like, you know, I know a guy from, I haven't met him yet, but, like, there's a dude in Uganda that I've been back and forth with enough that it's interesting, like, what other people in Bitcoin does he interact with, know, etc., right? So he's over in Africa, so that's like, there's like a whole like cross section there. But like, when do I think about it? And that is something that has like been fascinating to me. And Noster sort of can like, there's a way to display that, I think, in like an interesting way, in a way to, I don't know what it is because I'm shit at designing, and I'm
sure
blind.
I know,
but yeah,
Noster is kind of it's the first, I think, it's not the first, right? But it's the first one that seems to be really catching on, at least in a very small niche market, but it's very passionate. And I think it's growing because of that passion and just rethinking how to rebuild social networking, but to do it completely open source, like community emergent, instead of this top down. And it's going to take a while to figure it out.
You do it by testing and prod.
But if they're going... Yeah, right, exactly. And just iterating.
Well, and everything
so
works together.
It's basically the kind of base layer of the people that's
right,
like your attention.
Right, it's like if you go back to the early 90s, like the early internet, like the guys that built the IRC chat, and they built the protocols that the world, the web and social media and SMS, text messages and everything like runs on today. It's almost like doing that for the social networking layer.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin is like enabling that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's free and open exchange of ideas and values.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that I just kind of had an epiphany. Like that's what Noster and Bitcoin are doing. It's like we talk about the internet of money. Well, the internet we have now is not too centralized. It's like a panopticon. So we're building a new internet for the internet of money. Like a new, that's going to be
funded by money.
I'm going to say,
It's like
every transaction.
Like a dev can go out and ship a great product and go, hey, here's my release. And like some influencer can go repost it and say, hey, this dev is doing awesome things. This is the app you use every day. Isn't this so cool? And people can zap either the influencer or they can zap the dev or they can, you know, like it with a shit emoji or whatever other emoji you want. And the beautiful thing is, no matter what client you're using, so like on iOS, there's Primal. I use Amethyst on Android. If you're on the web, there's like a million other ones.
Iris.
And Iris, yeah. But it all shows the same content.
Right.
Like it's all the same profile.
And you can customize. And
not necessarily the same content. Like you can filter content and stuff, but like you can.
Right.
Yeah.
You can display how you want. You can add features that it's almost like soft fork in Bitcoin. Like if you run this client, you know, you have these features. It's all backwards compatible. You have these new features. And then whichever one's the best one will ultimately, a lot of people will flock to that, but you'll still have options. You can still have your own client.
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't like any of the clients, you just go build your own. It's super simple too.
Right.
Takes away the whole back end. Sure. The whole back end's
gone. Yeah. It's crazy.
It just
came to mind when you
go ahead.
Oh, when you mentioned the emojis, something came to mind, and it ties in with your language background. And I'm wondering if you have any insight on how language has evolved throughout
other languages.
Because you've studied a different language. You know, you've studied different characters, you've studied an entirely different way of communication. So
I was
what I was did I totally
that. No, that's a whole new another episode. That question, answering that question, but I was gonna rescue it with say, like you brought up the emojis, where it's such a stupid thing. Like we take it for granted, like emojis and memes, but like that's how you get really good feedback about what you're building and if it is good or bad.
Yeah.
People are just showing up and posting memes and emojis day, like. Optimistic ones, like they're giving you feedback, like this is fun, this is awesome, like
what,
you're doing this.
What you're describing is the answer to Mike's question. It's context.
Right.
Context. Being able to provide context and value is
and
like
feedback.
Transfer of value is one of the most high signal forms of context.
It's the most you saying context, and I think the other side of that is the feedback. Like you're constantly getting feedback, whether it's positive emojis, positive memes, or maybe they're just torching you that you suck and what you're building sucks, or maybe you're not getting any money for your time and that's good feedback. And then you start getting money for your time and that's better feedback. And you start to do where you get the best feedback. What you do, you start to do, you start to build, you start to communicate in the way that gets you the best feedback.
Yeah.
And the most value into that context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the reason why I tagged you guys on Nostrum. I was like, hey, you guys want to get high and talk? And you're like, yeah, dude, let's do it. I was like, yes.
That ties in a really nice relationship between signal and value, I'd say.
Right.
You pointed out. I think about this a lot too, like what signal is. You know, it's like what when we mention signal, this is a term that, you know, it just keeps on coming closer and closer, and we keep hearing it all the time. Like what this means.
Yeah, it's the best information about, you know, the context that you're in at that point. It's whatever the best information is that allows you to make the best decisions, solve problems.
One of the first episodes that I listened to, the dude was on there talking about how it's the vibe, it's the frequency of everything.
There you go.
Right? That was like,
yeah, well, that's how
shout out Eric Stacks. Shout out.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
That's how you sense it.
I was, the vibe. That got me amped to come on here.
Hell yeah, dude. We got to get Eric back on. And you. We'll do a four-way.
Sweet. Totally solving the world's problems on this show. Absolutely.
Right. Somebody should, dude. We'll have to do this again, dude, because I feel like this has gone by so quickly, and we want to keep going, but I think we got a good background on you. And you have a pretty cool story. So I think people are going to want to connect with you. I'll probably end up in, I keep saying I'm not going to go to the Bitcoin conference every year this time. And then I always go. So yeah, I'll be
there's going to be a whole group of Bitcoin veterans and we're going to have a party.
Bitcoin veterans, man. Those guys are, for sure. I'm in the Telegram group. So if you're the Bitcoin veteran, join the Telegram group.
Telegram group?
Everyone with their USAA accounts.
Signal?
Oh yeah, you get a, or Signal, excuse me. I always say the wrong ones.
See, Mike knows it's Signal.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Anyway, I'll be there. I'm here to ham radio, Jim.
Of course, why not?
Yeah, but we'll put your NPub in the show notes, but if people want to get in contact with you, they want to learn more about your meetup or just fucking build something with you, where do they find you?
ShenandoahBitcoin.club. That's the easiest way. We meet like every third Thursday or every third Saturday. And, other than that, like I'm active on GitHub. I do a little bit, I do dev in the Freedom Tech space. So if you're out there, give me a shout out. But nice. Yeah, other than that, through the meetup or on Noster, I am Noster only. I do have a LinkedIn account through like work with like, it was a weird thing with the recruiter needed. I don't know. But,
oh man, I wish I'd asked this question. This question. The question is, why are you Noster only?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The signal.
But I don't know if it's okay.
There you go. Yeah. You're part of one thing. It's one thing to find the signal. It's the other thing to be able to tune out the noise, right? You're just tuning in the noise and focusing on the signal.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a list. You can create a list of people to follow, very similar to like Twitter lists or whatever. And it's called Signal, all lowercase. So
I'll have to look for that. Awesome. Hey, man.
Cool.
We'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Gary.
Study Bitcoin.
All right, Lou. I'll cut it.
Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate Podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!